Hi, and welcome to the Conservation in HD podcast series. Today we'll be talking about understanding stakeholders and natural resources management. I'm Christy Brown Nunez, a conservation social scientist in the Human Dimensions branch of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, located in the Natural Resource Program Center in Fort Collins, Colorado. This podcast is part of our effort to put tools and resources into the hands of natural resource practitioners and is a collaboration with the National Conservation Training Center. Here with me today is Katie Steigermeister. Katie is currently a Senior Public Affairs Specialist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Midwest Office of External Affairs. In her current position, Katie works to use social science to inform communication efforts. Prior to joining the service, Katie received a PhD in Natural Resource Science and Management from the University of Minnesota. Using qualitative research methods, she examined the role of policy in fostering citizen engagement in water conservation. In both her formal training and professional career, Katie has found value in utilizing stakeholder analysis techniques to her work and assisting colleagues in doing the same. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, Christy. Glad to be here.
So there's definitely increasing awareness about the need to include the public in natural resource management. And we often hear the term stakeholder used, but there may not be a complete understanding of what all that concept or that term entails. Could you give us a definition?
Sure. You're right. There are many, many ways to define stakeholders. But for me personally, what I find to be the most important thing to remember is that we're really talking about people. Either individuals or a group of people who in some way are impacted by our work and the work of our organization. And just like you and me, it's helpful to remember that they come to natural resource issues with their unique perceptions and ideas.
Okay, great. That's really helpful, I think. We need to be on the same page when we're discussing these sorts of things. So we know we need to consider stakeholders in our work, but why is it important?
Understanding the viewpoints of others, those that we define as stakeholders, and knowing what they care about is important because it really helps us to communicate more effectively with them and along those lines pursue more meaningful methods of engagement. Stakeholder analysis is a great way to get started on the right path with the people or groups who are part of your natural resource issue. So the best thing about it, too, is that it doesn't have to be an aggravating or drawn-out process. There are some tools and techniques that are out there to make it easy and approachable.
Natural resource issues can sometimes be contentious, as we all know. So do you see stakeholder analysis as a technique of starting to work through these issues?
I do. I think that you can use it in one or two ways when you're in a situation where you're dealing with conflict. I would first offer up using some of these tools and techniques as a team-building exercise. So in instances when you're working in a team setting to build your stakeholder engagement plan, having some of these really structured activities in the beginning is a great way for the group to get on the same page and to ultimately avoid conflict within your own planning group. Looking outward, when it comes to stakeholders, I would say that stakeholder analysis can lay a really strong foundation for you when it comes to moving through conflict and understanding the source of conflict, but by no means is it a silver bullet. It should be used in conjunction with other tools like mediation and arbitration if you're really facing an issue with high levels of emotion and in situations where you're dealing with, let's say, a very adversarial stakeholder group. Use stakeholder analysis to lay the foundation, but don't use it on its own. Use it in conjunction with other tools.
So from your experience, who are some of the key stakeholders or categories of stakeholders in natural resource management projects?
Christy, that's a really tricky question, but it's a really important question to answer because I think when we step up to stakeholder engagement, in the beginning, we cast a wide net and we say we want to include everyone. Who is everyone? And do we really have the time and the resources and capacity to engage and work with everyone? And sadly, the answer is no, we don't normally have the time and capacity and resources. And so we have to take a harder look at who it is we're actually talking about. And in instances where stakeholder analysis has not been done, what you find are shortcuts in our thinking, where we're quick to label allies and opponents without really taking the time to think about what may be under the surface, you know, beyond the loudest issues going on, what really is going on in terms of motivating individuals to either be engaged or not engaged with your natural resource issue. So what I suggest is walking through a few key techniques and tools to make sure that you're taking the time to really think about who you're talking about when it comes to stakeholders. And where I like to begin, and this is normally a surprise to some people, is with a topic that they are most familiar with, and that's with themselves.
Uh-huh.
You begin stakeholder engagement with you, knowing who you represent, what your beliefs and perceptions are, and asking yourself, what is my goal with engaging stakeholders? What are expectations am I setting for myself? And then most important of all is when you've had time to reflect about who you are and what you believe and what your intent is, you need to ask yourself the question, can I listen to others without judging? Can I objectively listen to others' truths and perceptions and accept them for what they are without trying to re-educate or insert my own opinions? And hopefully, after you've taken time to reflect on these items, you'll come to the conclusion of, yes, now that I know myself, I can listen to others without judgment. And that is the first and, I think, the most important step to beginning your stakeholder identification and analysis.
It's really interesting. I haven't heard that before, but I do think it's critical. And do you see a role in the agencies when as being different for us as agency professionals than individuals who are maybe at an academic institution and leading a stakeholder analysis?
Yes, I really do, because we are natural resource professionals who are representing an organization, and that organization has certain stances or positions that we as employees have to take up. And we represent those positions in the community that we're working in. And so being open about who it is that we are representing is really important. And also knowing when your own personal viewpoints are divergent from what our organization's positions are. Because when you're wearing the uniform, when you're out working with the public or partners, you are not a citizen. You are an ambassador for the organization that you work for, and that is always an important thing to remember.
Really important distinction, yes. One could likely make extensive lists of stakeholders, I'm guessing, on certain issues. How are stakeholders identified, and how do we determine which of those stakeholders to then engage?
So, Christy, that's a really great question. I would say that when you are working by yourself, you'll find yourself sitting at a desk and just creating lists of individuals or groups who you think are part of the issue. I personally prefer a group setting when it comes to brainstorming your initial list of stakeholders. As I mentioned earlier, it's a really great way to build a team. And I say that it's a facilitated brainstorming exercise because you're not judging whether they're key stakeholders or whether they're not even stakeholders. It's really an open forum to just put everybody down on a page. And a facilitator will help remind the group that now is not the time for discussion. We're just making lists. We're just putting everything down onto paper so that we have, hopefully, a comprehensive playing field of who is engaged or not engaged or could potentially be engaged with an issue. From there, you really need to find a way to organize this and start prioritizing and sifting through the information that's been generated by the group. And so I recommend creating a grid or a four quadrant map, if you will, to help organize the names. And if you can visualize for a moment an X and Y axis, and on the X axis, you have power. So from the zero point heading to the right, it's increasing degrees of power. And then on the y-axis, from the zero point heading upward, you have increasing degrees of interest. And so what you're creating on this chart is four quadrants. And those who have, you know, in your top right grid, you have high power, high interest. And in your bottom left grid, you have low interest, low power. This is your landscape. This is a map on which to start placing your stakeholders. And this is where also being in a group environment can be really helpful, where you start to hold a discussion as you work through your brainstormed list of who's high interest, who's high power, potentially who's who's medium power, medium interest. And eventually what will emerge is a pattern in terms of you'll have some stakeholders that you've brainstormed who are placed along the grid in areas that you realize, like, wow, they're really who I need to work with. And then what's also powerful about this tool is you may find someone that's high power, low interest, and in discussion you realize we need to move them over to high interest. And so that gives you clues in terms of how to start building the next step of your communication or engagement plan.
So once we have that initial list and we've placed them on a quadrant or perhaps some other tool that we devise, how do we then determine which of those stakeholders we want to engage?
So this is the point in the process when you roll up your sleeves and you start putting all the pieces on one piece of paper. So I call it a planning matrix. You might hear it referred to as a modified participation planning matrix, but it begins with an Excel spreadsheet, so a tool that everyone has access to. And your first column is really simple. After you've gone through your mapping exercise, you should have a column of who you or your group has identified as your key stakeholders. That's your first column of information. As you move over to the right, your next column should be your level of desired participation. So this goes back to an earlier piece where I said you've got to be honest with yourself, what you want out of the process. I would refer our listeners to a spectrum of participation, either their organizations or there's other ones available online. I always recommend the International Association for Public Participation, and it'll give you a spectrum of the degree to which you truly want to engage a stakeholder group. So you can start with simply informing a group. I just want to tell you what's going on. You can move over then to something like consult. We want to get your ideas or your opinions. And then from there, you can move farther over in the spectrum and say, you know what, we actually want to involve you in the work that we're doing. And then for government organizations, this may be more of a challenge or more of a non-traditional item. But as you move farther down the column of, or the spectrum, I should say, of public impact, it moves into things like collaborate and empower. Mm-hmm. And in our day-to-day work, we may not get there always, but it's important to be honest with ourselves and our group what it is we really want so that when we go out and work with stakeholders, we're honest with them. We set the expectation, hey, we want you to be involved and we're just looking for your input. Or, hey, we actually want you to collaborate on this project. But setting the expectations first within your own planning group and then when it comes time for implementation, being open and transparent with stakeholders. So that's your second column. And then from there, moving one column over, I would say it's important to write down the primary concerns of the stakeholder group. What are their perspectives? And here's another moment of truth. Do you really know what their perspectives are? You may think you know, but you may be unsure. It's important to flag that uneasiness because it means that you may need to do a little bit more work to really listen to this group and understand the deeper issue that's either motivating their behaviors or influencing how they're reacting to your project or proposed project.
So are you talking about doing some social research?
Yes, that definitely. That's one way that you can fill in the knowledge gap. There are social science practitioners out there who can assist you in designing, if you will, research methods to help you collect this information in a consistent and defensible manner. So things like focus groups and interviews and surveys, these are all tools that can help you capture the perceptions of stakeholders. And then finally, once you've written down the concerns of the stakeholder group, your next column should be core messaging. Well, now that I know what they're concerned about, these are my key messages to this group. This is what I really want them to know. And from there, you can move over one more column and you can begin your initial brainstorming on methods of communication or engagement. You know, we're going to do a website or we're going to do a public meeting. You know, putting down those initial thoughts of, now I know my stakeholder group. I know the extent to which I want them to be engaged. I know what they're concerned about. I have my core messages. This is how I'm going to work with them.
Great. So that also brings up another place probably where folks could reach out to experts in the field of communication, a resource we're going to describe a little bit more fully in a few minutes, but HDGov has some resources for those sorts of things. So once you have your stakeholders and they've been identified on a project or an issue, what's the next step?
Well, once you've identified your stakeholders and you know how the extent to which you want to engage them and you know what you're going to say to them, that's when you really have a strong foundation to move into either your strategic communication plan or your strategic engagement plan. You know, you've set the foundation, you've taken the time to talk about the issue with your team, and you're ready to go. You're ready to start building the true plan, if you will. You have your foundation in place.
So I mentioned just a moment ago that there are some tools and resources available to our listeners. Would you have a few recommendations?
Yeah, definitely. I would say that for those who are practitioners and you're looking for tools, I would direct you to John Bryson's paper, What to Do When Stakeholders Matter. Just like the participation planning matrix or the quadrant mapping, in that paper you'll find other tools that are similar to help you start organizing the pieces of the puzzle together. I would also really encourage listeners to gain a familiarity with quantitative and qualitative social science methods. And that isn't to mean that you have to become an expert, but knowing what tools are out there and what might be useful to help inform your efforts is a great, great thing to pursue. And I'll take a moment to describe the value of quantitative research methods is that, let's say you're in a situation where you don't have one or two stakeholder groups or even three or four, you may have hundreds of people that you need to work with. And it is one of those moments when something like a survey could really help you inform some of your messages or the degree to which you want to engage individuals. It's a great way to capture a large amount of data from a broad data set. With that being said, qualitative research methods can provide you with richer nuances. They can help you to really understand the story behind the data points. And so, as I mentioned earlier, things like focus groups and interviews, when done appropriately and in a defensible manner, so following a true research protocol, can really set you on a path for success, because you're not just half-heartedly listening, you're really listening. You're collecting information from individuals in a really meaningful way, and you're organizing them in just like any type of research in a defensible manner that right. could be replicated.
Right, a systematic process.
A systematic process, yes. Exactly.
Okay, well, thanks so much, Katie. I appreciate you being in the studio with me today and sharing your knowledge and valuable insights with us. If our listeners have questions about this topic or other human dimensions topics, you can visit the HD resource portal within the HDGov site, which was created by the Human Dimensions branch for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service employees and those who work with the service. You can locate the page via Google by searching HDGov. That's HDGOV. Finally, I want to let you know that we have several additional podcasts in the works. All podcasts can be found on the NCTC podcast page, which you can find by Googling NCTC podcasts. You can also be notified of new podcasts by subscribing on iTunes. Just search Conservation in HD in the iTunes podcast store. If you have ideas for future podcast topics, please email the Human Dimensions branch at human_dimensions@fws.gov. Thanks so much for joining us today.